This is David Herskowitz, Artistic Director of Target Margin Theater, and you are listening to Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Welcome, welcome to the Davehood. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am thrilled to be talking and laughing with the person on the other end of this telephone line. His name is David Herskowitz, no relation to David Lefkowitz, whom you may know from this radio program. No, David Herskowitz has been for almost 2.5 decades the artistic director of something called the Target Margin Theater, off Broadway in New York. And they've done a lot of Shakespeare, and they did a big Faust thing a few years ago. But most importantly now is they're doing a whole giant Jewy thing. And it's exciting in the beginning with a Jewish play called The Haunted Inn that's taking place in March in New York. And so, without further ado or a don't, please welcome to the Davehood, David Herskowitz. Welcome, shalom.
Shalom. Thank you so much, Rabbi.
Oh, thank you.
Wonderful to be here.
Thank you for being with us. So, let me ask, before anything else, got to get to the Jewish stuff. What intrigued you? What made you want to do a 2-year exploration that you have entitled Beyond the Pale, this exploration of Jewish life and theater?
The simplest way that I can answer that question, maybe with another question. Forgive me.
Oh, there you go. Of course.
The very Jewish thing of answering a question with a question. My question is, what do you think about when I say Yiddish theater?
Sophie Tucker and Menashe Skolnick too. The beloved Menashe. Please, if you can fit in a revival of the Zulu and the Zeta in your Beyond the Pale, I would love that so much. And then Louis Gossett Jr. too, for some particular reason.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yes.
My point is that's right. That we all have wonderful associations with Yiddish theater, and what I have come to realize in the last few years, and this for me started really 3 or 4 years ago, I would say even, what I started to realize is that Jewish theater and Jewish culture, Yiddish theater and Yiddish culture specifically, because that really is the focus of what we're doing, are far, far beyond what most people think about when you say Yiddish to them. They have certain associations, and those associations are great. But what I came to realize is, wait a second, this work, especially in the theater, is astonishingly eclectic, progressive, sophisticated, transgressive, surprising, experimental. I mean, these Yiddish authors and performers and artists were doing work from the late 19th century up into the early to mid 20th century that was as artistically astonishing as anything else out there, anything. And I think people don't realize that.
So it's just nice little stories about the shtetl, and then you've got the jazz singer thing of the kid wants to be a violinist or a thing, but his father wants to be this, and then they work it out, and everybody cries. That is the basic.
Everybody cries. It's either it's sweet, sentimental stuff about the shtetl and all that, or it's comedy. And both of those things have a greatness about them. Don't get me wrong. There's truth in those preconceptions, but you understand my point, which is what actually you discover when you look into this stuff is, my God, this is a European literature that is absolutely as contemporary and sophisticated as any other European literature of that moment, and today, for that matter. So my mission, so to speak, with the program is to say, look, I don't just want to put on a nice show. Sure, I want to put on a nice show. I want to put on something interesting and challenging, as we always do, but really my goal is that people like you and other members of the Synagogue of the Sons of Bitches,
yes,
appreciate how they need to take another look at Yiddish culture. And people who make theater go back to these plays, and people who do other performing arts or other fine arts or literary things go back and look at all these different works and say, wow, there's much more there.
Well, there's been the hint of that. The one play that has sort of transcended the usual idea of Yiddish theater over the years has been the Dybbuk. That has been the one that's gone out there, and people have said, oh, my God, that's not what we were kind of thinking Yiddish theater would be.
That's it. And even people, the Tippic is one of those plays that everybody thinks they know it, but even people who think they know it don't really know it, you know? Right. They may go back, everybody's heard the Tippic, but if you actually go back and look at that play, read it, or see a performance of it, exactly, it will challenge and surprise your preconceptions. And similarly, you know, the other play, or another play that has come a little more into the public realm in the last, oh, I would say 10 or 15 years, is a play you may know called God of Vengeance.
Is that Sholomesh?
Sholomesh, well right. done, exactly. And that's the you know, the turbulent lesbian love story play.
Oh, I love that. Oh, yeah.
And that's another one that people go, what? You're kidding. You know, and that, let me tell you, those plays, the Tippic and God of Vengeance, those are the plays I'm not going to do, because those are the ones that have actually a little bit of currency, and I'm trying to say they are the tip of a very, very interesting iceberg.
I don't know. I think my congregation would beg you to do the lesbian one.
Modern
day, second in the showers of a, you know, a cheerleading squad. I would do it immediately if I were you. You'd sell a thousand. I would buy most of the tickets.
One of the number one questions, just practical production questions, that you immediately come up with doing the play that we're doing presently,
which is called the Haunted Inn. Yes.
Yes, which I can say more about in a second. Is so should we be naked or not in one particular scene?
Oh. And what did you choose?
We're talking about a play from 1912.
Right. Well, you know, people had skin back then. They had bodies. You know,
it turns out they did, and they said dirty things to each other, and they took off their clothes, and they were violent, and gee, they were actually people. You know?
People don't think that way.
All of that stuff is in this play. I mean, people, you begin, I mean, in this play, which is by the, I'm translating, we're presenting it as the parenthesis in. There's no haunted in there. And that's because the word for haunted actually means many things in Yiddish. It means empty, it means vacant, it means abandoned, and it comes to mean or be associated with haunted. But what's clear in the title is that you read it in Yiddish and you're not quite sure how far that word goes. So we're leaving it as a blank.
Yes, but I have to say, you're giving fits to editors and people and 'cause they don't know how to list the damn thing. Unless they start with T, which makes it easy. If you're trying to list alphabetically, I'm telling you that it's going to be a marketing nightmare for everybody.
This is maybe that's my problem, too. Not enough attention to the marketing. But you know, on the other hand, maybe you have to put the asterisk up in front of everything else.
And well, then that lists it first in any particular alphabet. Right. There you go. Okay,
yeah, maybe that's what I'm going to pitch for.
You're forward thinking like the Yiddish theater of the 1910s. There you go.
Right. But what I was saying about this play is, you know, it begins and you feel like, oh, I recognize this. It's the shtetl. It's a farm. There's a sweet grandfather. They're trying to marry their daughter. I've been here before. It's like kind of like Fiddler on the Roof, you know. And as the play proceeds, it gets stranger and stranger and stranger. There are these spirits. Are they real? Are they not? People do very violent things. Some of the language is very sexual and forward. Are people possessed?
The language is not only forward, it's Jewish daily forward.
Exactly.
Sorry,
it's forward
that.
By the minute. Exactly.
I had to throw that in there. I apologize. But
it's a good pun is always worth stopping for.
I totally agree. So, I'm embarking on this exploration of Beyond the Pale and the plays that you're going to be doing. You probably knew going in already that Yiddish theater was not what we perhaps have seen just from the Volksbühne or just what's been done at the public theater over the years. But what have you learned more recently in doing these plays or thinking about them?
You mean what's out there today in Yiddish performance or what I myself have been learning about the historical material?
You yourself.
One of the main pleasures has been reading more. And here's something fun. A lot of this work, there's an enormous body of Yiddish literature.
It's a naked body, apparently, of Yiddish literature.
Exactly. And it is, and a lot of it is because of material things about the history of Yiddish theater and Yiddish literature. A lot of it is there's no systematic collection of this work. It's very hard to find it. Most of it is not translated into English. Even works that are very important and were very notable in their moment, very celebrated. So I'll often have the following experience. Here's the kind of thing I've been learning in the last year. I'm reading about a play, and in the play, there's an introduction to this play. much, and I think, great, I want to read that other play. And so I go looking for it.
Right.
Go looking for that play at the New York Public Library, at the university libraries in New York, big world-class libraries. Nope, it is not to be found. It doesn't exist in translation. And then I start talking to other Yiddish scholars who I'm working with. You know, PhDs, professors at different universities around the country who do this kind of thing and care about it. And then somebody quietly says, you know, you should talk to so-and-so over at the University of Illinois. I think he's been working on that play, and don't tell him I told you, but there might be a translation around. So I call up so-and-so at the University of wherever it is, and the guy says, you know what, actually, I do have a translation of that play. I'll send it to you. And so he emails you a copy of the translation, and suddenly you find that this gem that's an important Yiddish play that's totally unpublished and unknown, you couldn't find, going through the library systems, try as you might, in a kind of samizdat way, there's a circulation of work on these plays that is bubbling up.
Well,
that is exciting. Now you got me started, Rabbi. So
sure,
you're going to have to stop
please.
Me if you want me to stop.
No, no.
One of the other things that I found is with younger people, and this is, you know, a year ago I was a fellow at the American Academy in Jerusalem working on this stuff, and in Israel and in the United States, there's a generation of very countercultural 20-something people who are very into Yiddish culture in a new way. And they're like, I know a wonderful woman who does Yiddish drag performance.
Good Lord.
Yep. And that kind of thing. The kind of transgressive sense of Yiddish, the sense that Yiddish is an all kind of alternative language. It's a language for women. Yiddish has become a meaningful signifier in the LGBT community. It really has,
really?
Right? It's a way for Jews who are in those other communities to connect to Jewish culture in a way that feels outside the mainstream in a certain way. Partly, I think, because people have not realized how rich Yiddish is, and it has, in a certain way, been narrowed down into this tiny little box of sentiment.
Well, the funny thing is 25 years ago, Yiddish was basically dying out. Nobody was speaking it. It wasn't, you know, someone might revive a Yiddish play just for fun. And then what happened was the ultra-Orthodox, the people in the Jewish communities that are booming because they're having 55 kids, these are the people, when they're not in shul or studying the Torah, the language they're speaking is Yiddish. And they've been very much a part of bringing Yiddish back, also, I think, into lingo.
It's very true, and it's fascinating, because you talk to people and they say, well, nobody speaks Yiddish, there's no Yiddish. But, of course, often I try to remind people, in New York City, you can hear Yiddish spoken every day. Go sit on the subway, and you're going to wind up sitting next to people, a family, usually of Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox Jews, who are speaking Yiddish to each other. That's exactly right.
Or even, a stranger, a Chinese family sometimes.
Right. The tricky thing is that, of course, in those communities, going to a play, making music, these kinds of cultural experiences, reading most of the material that you and I are talking about would be absolutely not allowed, right? That would be an enormously transgressive act to perform. And so there's a kind of underground rebirth in that community of music readings that exists here in New York and also in Jerusalem that I've experienced, where even ultra-Orthodox Jews will get together late at night in little rooms or basements or somebody's apartment, and they'll sing and make music, stuff that they, you know, for an ultra-Orthodox Jew, it's singing, men and women singing together is out of the question. Listening to the voice of a woman is out of the question for most of those sects.
Well, I've been married for 25 years to my dear wife, Miriam Libby, and I kind of wish listening to the voice of a woman was banned. I really do sometimes. I'm just kidding. We're talking, by the way, please clear up some confusion for me, if you don't mind. You are David Herskovitz, right? That's your name. And you are a theater person, have been a theater person. Are you in any way connected to another David Herskovitz, spelled the same way, who edits and writes and does things for magazines?
No. No, I am. Although for years that I've been in New York, and we used to live actually quite close to each other, I've actually met David finally a few years ago. We broke the spell and met each other.
Right.
But no, we are totally different people. Although every now and then, back in the days when I had an answering machine, I would come home at night and I would hear a message on my answering machine that would go something like this. Beep. Hi, David. I, it's Jerry. I just can't finish that story and make that deadline. deadline tonight. I really wish I could talk to you about it. I hope it's going to be okay. Would you just call me back? Yeah, I just think I'm going to miss that deadline. I know I'm supposed to have it to you tonight. Just give me a call, would you? Beep. And I would think, well, I hope they find each other.
That's right. And you didn't have the other David's number to just call him?
No, we were totally out of touch. We were lived a few blocks apart from each other, but nope, no contact.
So all right, that allays that bit of confusion, especially when we're both coming up at the same exact time in those two different but somewhat connected disciplines,
because
they're both creative. So how did you get involved with the theater in the first place?
Oh, gosh, I did it as a kid, and I fell in love with it, you know? I think on some level, that's the answer for anybody. There's no rational reason to do theater. It's emotional. You do it because at some early stage of life, you connect with it. You have an experience in the theater, and that is revolutionizing. And you think, that particular experience is really incomparable. And this is the only way that I can keep making that experience happen.
Well, do you remember...
And the rest of your life trying to do that.
Do you remember the experience that made you go, wow, as a child?
Well, I think very early on, there were a couple of things. I mean, of course, I saw plays when I was little, but when I was really little, I remember going to see the Nutcracker, to see the ballet at night, and I just loved the theater, I loved the curtain, I loved the size of it and the scope of it and the music. But, on the other hand, at the same time, in that same era, I started to perform in little school plays, and I think the very first one that I had, I was in a... I was in a Temple youth group performance. This is true. I haven't remembered this in years, but now you're reminding me of it.
Yes.
And we acted out Chad Gadya, and I was the angel of death at the end. So everybody came on and was a little thing, you know, the stick, the dog, the ox, you know, all those different things.
But you got to be Malach HaMuvish.
Exactly. I got to be. It was a great part. I had a black cape, and I came out on stage, and I remember I kind of wiggled my eyebrows, and everybody broke out laughing. And it was great, and I think that moment changed my life. I was like, wow, that was great, you know?
But
like anybody on stage, I felt like I had them. You know, they were with me. It worked. I think I was about 7.
But that was an actor moment. You ended up moving towards...
I was on stage. And then what happened is, that was in place when I was a kid, but you know, I got more interested in making it, in creating the whole thing from the outside rather than the thrill of being in it. And that, you know, of creating that experience all the time for everybody rather than my own particular role in the larger thing. So I just, in the course of being in high school and college, I just shifted over and started making it more instead of just being in it.
And did you find yourself more drawn on some level to the avant-garde and the experimental rather than the narrative or commercial theater?
Yeah, very much, very much. I mean, that's just, you know... You'll appreciate this, Rabbi. You know, you make yourself, and then you make your work. And that's just who I am. You know, I have to do stuff that, ultimately, you're making things that are expressive of who you are and that speak to you as an audience. And I make the things that I would be excited to go see in a theater. And I'm excited by stuff that is mysterious, by stuff that surprises me and challenges me in different ways. And also, and this is very, very important to the mission of my work at my company, that is also entertaining. So it's not a contradiction to say this work will be experimental, artistically rigorous, mysterious, challenging, and so on, but it will also be engaging, fun, funny, and, let's not be afraid to say it, just entertaining.
Nothing wrong with, nothing at all.
Wrong with it.
Wrong with being...
The beautiful thing is to have both. You know, you can have both. It's hard, but you can. I'm going to take you on a great ride. You're going to love it. And at the end, you're also going to go, wow, that was really challenging.
Then let me ask.
What's all about?
I kind of get the feeling from the shows that Dave, the host of this radio program, used to see about 15, 20 years ago off-Broadway that you were doing, that you were on some level strongly influenced by people like Richard Foreman. Was he huge, or am I overstating the case there?
No, not at all. I mean, you're not overstating it. Richard is like a father to me in a certain way. I mean, I worked for Richard in the 80s as an assistant on shows. And by then, I was already, you know, I'm 50. So I was already, I was in my mid-late 20s. I was in my late 20s when I was working for Richard. So I already had some artistic ideas of my own and things I was interested in. But It was a very, very formative experience. In a certain way, those years for a few years of working on projects for Richard were enormously, enormously influential to me. And one thing that I now see, and this is brings us back, circling back to Yiddish theater, now that I'm looking more and more into this experimental Yiddish theater, I see that this Yiddish theater of the teens and 20s and 30s, the teens, 20s, and 30s especially, were works that informed what Richard does. So if you go to see Richard's plays, and not so much today because his work has evolved, but for many years through then, all of that, the iconography, the letters, the words in the air, things all over, all of that stuff, in a way, goes back, you can trace it back to design and imagery and language from these experimental Yiddish theater productions.
Now, did you end up since you were on some level formed by his work and by other people's, did you create sort of your own alphabet and aesthetic and iconography, especially in the first few years that you were developing? Like a system of signs and symbols known mainly to yourself that were mysterious to everyone else?
Yeah, I confess that I did.
What did they mean to you?
Well, it's kind of hard to answer that without really getting into specifics. But look, in the theatrical event, what I'm interested in doing is embracing all of the systems that are going on at once, at the same time. That's one of the things that's great about the theater. There's music, there's text, there's a story, there are characters, there's interpretive, like thematic ideas, there's design, there are costumes, there's a scenic picture, an image, there's a sound design, there's an architecture to it. All of these things are unfolding at the same time as you go through the thing, and more, and beyond the list that I just rattled off. What I want to do is embrace all those systems and orchestrate how they combine, how they harmonize, how they converge and diverge, the music of those systems coming together. They line up, they align, and sometimes they do not align. And having multiple systems overlapping on stage and the kind of music of all of those different systems happening at once, the polyphonic music of it, is to me what making theater is all about as a director. So some of the things that I just started playing with back in those days that are still alive to me in different forms now are, first of all, there's a very, very rich sound design, and often that'll mean not just playing some music in a scene, but playing multiple different sounds at once, overlappingly. Some of them will be textures, and the pattern of coming and going, like when they come and go itself, is kind of a system, and it won't line up in an easy way. You won't hear, oh, there's a certain music that comes on when a certain character comes on, or there's a certain music that I'll hear when it's getting scary and the spirits are around. Now I'm doing a play where they talk about spirits. Well, you can imagine a production where they play spirit music at certain right. times. That's too legible. That's too easy. The question is to introduce those ideas and then have them thwart our expectation in some way. Sort of the way that form in poetry does. We know what a sonnet is. We expect it to be a certain way. It is a certain way, but people who really, really write sonnets at the highest level, what they're doing is taking our expectation of a sonnet and then they're surprising us within that form. So again, I didn't think I would hear a sound like that then, and now it's coming, and now it's going away. Or another system would be certain markings on stage. So there was a period when people on stage would be lots of tape on people's...
I remember, Dave told me, I remember Dave telling me that he used to see that in shows like Mamba's Daughters. Yes.
And some Mamba's Daughters is a good example because, again, there are some stuff that you feel like, oh yeah, I can get that. Like, Mamba's Daughters is a play that's set in Low Country, South Carolina, and it's an important part of the play is the shape of not just racism generally, but racial relations among dark-skinned, light-skinned, and then white people, right? Dark-skinned blacks, light-skinned blacks, and white people. But almost the entire cast, occasionally a white person comes in, and that's a different event. But when it's all just the African-American Gullah people, there's a high sensitivity to who's dark and who's light, and that is talked about. It's an important part of the story. And so there was tape on people that was black, yellow, or white. Right? And so there were very clear markers, and anybody paying attention to the story could go, okay, I see, black, yellow, and white, and that's what they talk about, so it's a very simple system. But then, there's other tape that doesn't line up so easily. Certain people have X's on them, there are other bars, and some of those things are composition. expositional or formal. Some of them are articulating other elements of the story, singling people out or framing people for reasons other than the exact description of what they look like, what their skin color is, you know? And so that's an example of these kind of crazy, getting a system going and then making it increasingly complex so that it both invites us in and we feel like we can get it, but we can't really fully understand it.
And that's,
in a nutshell, that's it. You can say, that's why it's entertaining. You get it. You go like, oh, I get it. Right, I got it. But you also think, wait a second, I don't quite understand it. You know, but you don't have to understand it. You can just get it. That's what theater should do for me.
You don't have to understand it. You just have to get it. This is that sort of, I think, also explains marriage in some sense.
Exactly. Well, that's what life is like. Look, we do all kinds of things in life. We don't understand them in a really deep way, mostly. You know, we're kind of in debt. We don't really understand what the people around us are motivated by or what the story is that they're living. And it's hard enough to understand what the hell we're doing within ourselves. You know, we're wrestling with that all the time. So in that regard, even though my work you could describe as experimental or strange looking, to me, it is more naturalistic. It's more a direct expression of the way life is lived and the texture of how I live it.
Now one of the cool things about David Herskovitz, whom we are talking to on this radio program, is you are not just a director, but you are the artistic director of a theater company. And I'm kind of wondering, for Target Margin Theater, how much of your time is spent doing actual artistic stuff? How much is spent fundraising? How much is spent doing clerical and the things you just have to do to keep an organization going? How do you chop that up?
Boy, yes, you do all of it. I do all of it. I am very, very lucky that the company has gone on for a long period of time and grown a bit, and now there are really good people in the office with me. We're small, but I have a couple of associates in the office who are able to handle more of the production, the administrative stuff, the management stuff, and in 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I did all of that stuff. At the beginning, I did all of it myself, and now I can't do all that stuff, and mercifully other people can, and they're probably better at it. Then the big thing that takes me away from just artistic work is fundraising.
Right.
And, you know, there's no getting around it. I mean, the price that I pay for doing this is I spend a lot of my time raising money. And, you know, in a certain way, I welcome it, because if I can do that and keep funders, foundations, individuals, people who care about this culture engaged with it and supporting it, then that allows me to get stuff like this Yiddish work out there. So, no, I didn't set out to become a fundraiser, and I do give a large chunk of my time to that kind of thing in various ways. But it's, you know, that comes with the territory, and as I say, the more I can succeed in getting people to buy into what we're doing and the value that it has for the culture, then the more freedom that we have to do stuff that's really meaningful. So, look, if anybody out there is listening to this who wants to help us, you know, bring Yiddish culture back into mainstream culture, you know, in this new way, hey, go to targetmargin.org and make a contribution.
Yes, tax deductible.
That's what it's all about.
Are you a 501c, Gimel? Is that, are you?
Yeah, 501c3, exactly.
Good, this is good to know. Can I ask, what is it that attracts you, since you've done, as you said, Mamba's Daughters, and you directed a Chikamatsu Japanese play, and also, is there something very particular about ethnic theater that grabs you?
Well, good question. You know what it is? What I've come to realize is the principle that really animates what I do is difference. You go to the theater, and a lot of work that you see, the people who are behind the work are working very hard to make the work like the people in the audience. They want to say, hey, don't be scared by this old strange play. It's just like you. And so they dress it up with people who are in contemporary dress or who look like figures we recognize, or they change the language to, you know, they edit out parts of the story that are just too weird or wouldn't make sense. And to me, the thing that excites me about the theater is precisely the opposite. It's that I go to the theater to encounter the ways in which the world is totally different from me. So I tend to be drawn toward material that is culturally at a distance from me, or historically at a distance from me, or different from me in terms of sensibility or language or structure, that surprises me and says, oh, wow. Now, the Yiddish project is interesting because, look, I'm an Ashkenazi Jew. So in a way, the Yiddish project, you could say, is the closest to me, but it's a part of my didn't recognize in this way. So I'm rediscovering something that, you know, that I really didn't know about. But in a way, it's the same thing as discovering Chikamatsu, you know, that I say, wow, look at this stuff. It's I didn't know about this. It's totally different from what I know and from what I expect. And yet, it also speaks to me. And that's what's exciting about any creative art, any work of the creative imagination, is that it surprises us with difference, I think.
Well, everybody will want to be surprised and delighted, but and also haunted a little bit by the scary, creepy, haunted, empty, hollow in. Think, add your own adjective. That should be a contest with the audience. You come in, you're writing on a piece of paper your own adjective, and it's playing at the Abrams Arts Center, which is kind of almost Lower East Side, so it's right in the right kind of place, from, when is it, March 7th through March 30th. Can I ask, though, since this is a two-year project, do you have anything else definite that you know you're going to be doing over those 2 years of Yiddish theater origin?
We're considering a lot of different works, and I'm not at a point where I can announce the names of plays because it's a little up for grabs. There's so many good things, but I can tell you that what we're also doing is, and this is starting now, this is starting this year, and during the run of the Inn, we'll be doing panel discussions, concerts, readings of other plays. So if you go onto the website, you'll see there are a lot of little events happening all the time, because I do want people to have a chance to encounter the breadth of this material. I don't know. I'll say one. Let me see. There are a couple works that I really love and that are kind of irresistible. This fall, we did some workshop productions, and one of them was a play called Night in the Old Marketplace by, Peretz. I.L. Peretz.
You'd love it. Yes.
And that's an extraordinary play. I'm very interested in Uriel Acosta, which had a very big place in the history of Yiddish theater and was done in many different versions by Yiddish theater companies. And on and on. There's also a ton of work with music in different kinds. We did a production back in the fall of Shulamis, which is one of the sort of touchstone early music theater pieces from the Yiddish theater. So that's the kind of work that's out there, you know, ranging from music theater to historical drama to very Night in the Old Marketplace is a very poetic kind of dreamlike associative drama. It really doesn't have a clear place or plot, or, you know, it's very mysterious kind of. It's more like a stage poem almost.
And actually, since you also mentioned musicals, one way that people who know of off-Broadway theater and musicals might know of David Herskovitz outside of the Target Margin Theater is that you did direct a musical off-Broadway called People Are Wrong almost a decade ago. You had the guy from They Might Be Giants in there. Was that a very different experience, being more of a hired hand on something brand new that was taking shape?
It is a very different kind of work, it's true, and it was good for me to have. I loved that piece, and it was good experience for me just to have to deal with that kind of development, because it's not usually what I do. But I tell you, I liked it so much that we did early versions of it, and then Target Margin Theater became a partner in that production, and ultimately it was the Vineyard and Target Margin Theater who did it together when we did the larger production off-Broadway. So it was a very different experience, but it was a very good one for me, and one that I actually kind of, in the end, that we really wound up jumping into.
I did not realize that Target Margin was involved. Do you see yourself go at some point after this, the Yiddish theater project is over, jumping a little back into the commercial waters, or are you just so involved in Target Margin that you'll be doing other stuff, you know, in company, in house?
I think that I'll always be developing stuff in house because it's such a wonderful, you know, launch pad, incubator, you know, sandbox for me, so to speak, to do really crazy things. And I can't say that anything I do is really commercial. I don't have that kind of career and that kind of sensibility. But I do also get asked to do things in a more freelance way, and I know that over the coming couple of years, I think there'll be probably a couple of those projects too.
And that also helps put food on your table. You're allowed to be in the New York theater, not be on Broadway, not have this giant, you know, smash making millions, but somehow eat. which is a miracle in itself in the theater, which I think is wonderful. We are talking and finishing our discussion with David Herskovitz of Target Margin Theater. Everybody, go see the Inn. Well, how? What do you call it? What do you?
The asterisk. The Inn.
The what Inn? What?
The Inn.
The Inn. Go into the Inn at the Abrams Arts Center in March and go see the work of David Herskovitz and Target Margin Theater. I want to thank you very, very much for discussing these things with me and for being in the neighborhood. It has been a pleasure.
Rabbi, it's been my pleasure. It's great to talk to you. I really enjoy it.